Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear that?
Welcome to the Raven Podcast with your hosts Michelle Ampillo and Mandy M. Roth, where they'll talk a little about everything and a lot about nothing.
Hi, and welcome to Raven Radio. I am still trying to figure out if we're even on air because we were getting an error message. It wouldn't be Raven Radio if we didn't, right?
I swear to you, I bring with me nothing but problems for this thing. Everywhere I travel, there's an issue with this. And it's,
so
I think I'm the jinx.
So are we on air?
I think so. If not, okay. We're just going to talk to ourselves for a while, like, you know, old days.
All right, great. Well, welcome to Raven Radio. This is 27th day of February. Today we will be talking about superstitions, specifically about photographing the dead and the practice that people actually did of that, death masks, and just kind of various trivia and probably about death.
Yeah.
Very morbid
show
today.
We're so predictable.
And New York author Jacqueline Frank will be joining us later. She must be crazy because she really likes coming and hanging out with us on the show.
Got to be crazy to put up with us.
Listeners, if you can hear us, you're welcome to call in and ask questions for us or Jackie. The call-in number is 646-595-3998. It is a New York number, so long-distance charges may apply. For more information on using your computer to chat live with us during the broadcast, just visit ravenhappyhour.com and follow the prompts for Raven Radio. Or you can email us directly at ravenradio@ravenhappyhour.com, and we'll get to your questions on next week's show because we don't check it during the live broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's everything.
I think so.
Yay, Michelle.
Yeah.
Me did good.
The ball's in your court again today. Michelle's running the show. I'm just like behind the scenes help.
Well, it's saying that we can click to listen, so.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Yes, so any news for you? Do you have anything you want to talk about this week?
You know, no, we actually I wanted to give a shout-out thanks to Annette from Paranormal
yes.
Talk Radio.
Yes.
She had us on yesterday with, actually, Jacqueline Frank was there as well, our guest
yeah.
of the day. She must like us. She keeps coming back.
We're tearing our way through radio land with Jackie.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was an hour and a half long, and we've got the link listed on our blogs. So if you go to ravenhappyhour.com, you can, you know, follow the breadcrumbs and find your way there. But it was a lot of fun, and that was very sweet to have us on, and we
yes.
were talking about romancing the paranormal, so basically paranormal in romance literature. I call this literature. I can't pronounce it right.
That'll be the only time we're ever referred to as that, too. Oh, my gosh. So Jackie is with us now. We'll go ahead and bring her on the line, and we can't be held responsible for anything we might miss. I'm just kidding. Jackie, you with us?
Yes.
How are
Hello.
You?
Hello. I didn't know we were talking about superstitions and death masks and stuff
yeah,
like
well,
that.
Well, we're also talking Nightwalkers, too, so you ought to know a little about that one.
Oh, well, that one I know about. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
For a minute there, I was worried.
Well, see, everyone who listens to us will know that we actually had nothing planned because we always grab things we know about. We're like, oh, today we're going to talk about cooking.
wait,
no, we're not, because Michelle will be lost. But
I would talk about eating the cooking.
Oh, my gosh. So now you have got, for anyone who maybe hasn't heard you yet on the show, come on, guys, she's been on how many times? Do we really need the intro? Go ahead and tell us a little about yourself.
Actually, this is only my second time.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? We've done something else with you, though, too, so that's why.
We just did Paranormal Talk.
Right.
So it feels like we've been...
Oh, forever.
Ever. Oh, my God.
But go ahead and tell the listeners a little about yourself.
Okay. I am an author. I write books. Some people say that they're good. I'm one of them. And mostly, I write paranormal romance, and actually, oh gosh, it's something I really enjoy doing, so it's like doing, you know how they always say, get a job that you love? This is my job that I love. And the series is called The Nightwalkers. They are the races and cultures of the night that live just beyond the edges of human culture. We just don't know that they're there for the most part. And whenever we do find out that they're there, we usually screw it up. So
there's only 6 books in the series, right?
What?
There's 6 books going to be total in the series?
There's 5, actually, going to
five
be
in
the
initial
part of the series. It's actually going to turn into a bit of a saga. So in the first part, it's we're dealing mainly, not exclusively, because, you know, people, you know, you give me a gig guideline and I'll be more than happy to step outside of it. But the first 5 books deal mostly with the demon culture. And that ends with Damien in June and Noah in September. Noah is the king of the demons, and he gets to have his little ever after.
Noah, still waiting for that.
Sorry, you have. Do you have a
you
frog?
You were booted. She said to get.
Yeah, I have a king stuck in my throat. Can we put
okay. And then in January of next year, we start the next part of the saga, which is the Shadow Dweller culture. Mm-hmm. And that is actually very different from the demon culture, because demons can actually tolerate most of the Nightwalkers have a huge weakness to sunlight in one form or another. Like the lycanthropes, it poisons them. They get sun poisoning if they're in the light. And just like you and I would get a sunburn, it happens to them, but like to the extreme. And you know, obviously we all know what happens to vampires. And for demons, it makes them very tired, drains them of their energy, makes them fall asleep. But for Shadow Dwellers, they can't tolerate any light at all. And it's pretty interesting to consider what it's like to live in this world and avoid light.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, it really gets very complicated.
I'm not kidding. When I opened the door the other day to get the mail and the sun was shining, I hadn't seen sunlight in a while because I don't leave my house altogether that often. I swear I was like a gremlin. Bright light.
You throw your hand and you do that Dracula hiss.
Exactly.
I do that all the time.
You know, at a nearby college town, we actually had a guy who dressed up like a vampire and would sit in the corner of this bar and just randomly, like, twist his head and hiss at people.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, college.
The Dracula hiss, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, we had a girl who pulled a toaster she had painted behind her on a leash. I don't know why.
Did it have whales?
I don't know. She had a little checkered toaster. And nobody wanted to ask her because pretty much nobody cared. They were like, oh, crazy girl. And since their focus was off me for the moment, I was like, carry on with your big bad toaster.
I'm surprised you didn't try to outdo her by, like, dragging your stove the next day.
I have my friends. What do you think about this?
Outdo household appliances.
Yeah, exactly. So now, Jackie, tell us a little about the setup of the Nightwalkers. You've got, well, the first book is about an enforcer. Can you tell us a little about that and, like, the taboo situation?
The first book is about Jacob. Jacob is the demon enforcer, and his job is to keep demons and other races separate. They're very when the series starts out, demons are very elitist. They have this whole purity issue, and they have a lot of laws to enforce that. And Jacob's job is to keep everybody basically separate. And then normally that's not a problem, but the demons are afflicted with a certain kind of moon madness. Every time the full moon of Samhain or Beltane comes around, that's Halloween, around Halloween and May Day, around May Day, whenever those full moons come around, they start getting urges, really intense urges. And they're not supposed to have those urges. And if they focus on, say, a human being, it's considered a very bad thing, mainly because demon could probably tear a human to shreds just, you know, by the power of its passion. So Jacob's job is to go, bad demon, get away, go, bye-bye. And then he punishes them. The punishment is very, very severe and apparently very degrading, but we don't really know what that is doing.
Now, if
which
you
I get
pick,
told
which...
it for many, very often. Tell us what it is. I'm like, no, use your own imagination. It's very good. Anyway, and then his story evolves to the point where he encounters a human woman and finds himself really attracted to her. And the question basically becomes, who enforces the enforcer? So it's very interesting to watch how it evolves and how the entire culture has to change just because of this one meeting. It's very cool. And then,
I had a question. If you had to pick, which Nightwalker would be your personal hero? If you had to, you know, be with one of them.
You haven't met him yet.
What? That's just teasing and wrong.
If you want me to pick somebody from who you've already met.
Yes.
Then I would have to say Noah.
Really?
I love
yeah.
Noah. Noah.
Me too.
but besides being hot, well, because what people don't may not know if they're not into the series is that demons are actually elementals. Each demon is connected to an element: earth, air, water, fire, mind, and body. And all right, I know what I'm talking about. Really, I do. I wrote it.
Yeah. And Noah is the fire, right?
And Noah is fire. Noah is the demon king. Fire demons are very rare and very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The element of fire is very hard to control. And males versus females, even and all of the elements are very different. The women tend to be more of the emotional side of each element, and the men attend.
And you had your women set up to be very prim and proper and respectful, and I mean they're just these, you know, embodiments of grace. And I love that your introduction of Belle in the beginning made some of them question that. You know, how much do we give in, and how much do we stand up for ourselves? I love that little bit too.
Okay.
Hey, stop it.
What? I mean, okay.
Am I wrong? Did you not?
Well, I'm actually trying to, I mean, as far as prim and proper, I can talk. I'm sorry, I haven't slept at all. I mean, we could have actually, Mandy, you and I could have stayed on the phone all night long because I didn't go to sleep. I'm really tired. actually, one of my favorite characters, Magdalena,
mm-hmm.
is
She's
like
in book
the
two
epitome
with Gideon.
Of grace and femininity.
Right.
She's actually a very proper woman, and she's used to taking care of her brother, who is Noah, his household as hostess, yada yada, and things have been the same. And there's very formal culture. And then in comes Isabella, the woman that Jacob meets, and she is a human woman from the Bronx of New York, and she's all very human, and she's very New York.
Yeah.
So she kind of comes in and is like, all right, what are we going to do about this, you know, and turns everything upside down, so it's pretty cool. That's what you meant.
Yeah.
I was reading on your website, you have a couple events that you're doing this summer. I don't think we've ever asked you that, where you're appearing and signing. And.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to the Romantic Times Convention in Pittsburgh. That's in April, around the 16th, I believe. And they have a signing the Saturday of that week that we're going. I'm going to be there from... on Saturday with a lot of different romance authors, and it's a great opportunity to get all your all your favorite authors to sign a book and or to just even meet them.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got the Reader Appreciation Weekend that Laura Lee is holding in September, and I'm going to be going to that. So I also am trying to put together a signing in, near Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I'll see how that works out.
And you're doing, at the Romantic Times this year, you're doing the Nightwalker Stud Muffin Mixer.
Yeah, I'm so throwing a party.
Everything that
I'm throwing a party at 8:30 in the morning. What the heck was I thinking?
Well, no, what I
want to
know is it everything
yes,
that I'm picturing?
Yes, it's the Nightwalker Stud Muffin Mixer, and we're going to be serving coffee and gourmet muffins, and I actually have some of my much beloved soldiers who I have a lot of soldiers, and I actually like to read my staff. And mainly because I send it to them for free. It's like, hey, guys, support the cause, woohoo! You know, and then they come back and they're like, send me more, send us more, where's the rest of it? I'm like, okay. So anyway, a couple of them have offered to serve muffins in a rather shirtless manner. So it's if they can make it, actually, they might end up going on a training exercise. So I might be studless.
Now, for anyone listening out there, if you want to call in and talk to Jacqueline, or you want to call in and even talk superstitions, which we will get to, we're not opposed to starting it whenever, it's 646-595-3998. That's 646-595-3998. Also, you can hop on ravenhappyhour.com and follow the links, and you can find your way into the chat room to ask questions there, which we will read on air. Okay, I think I'm done with my break-in there. Sorry.
Superstitions.
Yes, yes. Are there any superstitions in the Nightwalker world?
You know, it was actually funny that you talk about that because somebody was just talking to me about the superstition, the black cat superstition. Do not let a black cat cross your path. And I always find that really funny because I actually own 3 black cats, and they do nothing but cross my path. I like trip and I fall on them all the time.
Well,
is that the bad luck
like
part?
What's that, Michelle?
Well, maybe you have like an immunity.
Yeah, well, actually, there are some people who actually believe that. They believe if you actually physically own a black cat, it helps ward against that.
We had Thanksgiving at my house a few years back, and we were getting ready for everyone to come over, and my husband was going out to make sure that the snow was off the ground, right? And he starts calling to me. He's like, you come out, but don't bring anybody else, right? And I'm like, okay. And I get out there, a black cat, like not a kitten, but not quite a cat, that in-between stage, was dead underneath my wheel in the back. He hadn't been hit by me. He just went underneath my car and laid down and died. You know, I don't know why. He was a stray, and I'd never seen him before in my life. But and then my husband looks at me. He's like, you're the only person I know that this cat would purposely come and lay down in a path you can't avoid crossing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So we were scrambling because everyone was coming over, and most of my family are huge cat lovers. And I was like, oh, this is going to set the tone for Thanksgiving. Great. So, yeah, I had one purposely come and end his life in my path. Yeah.
I would consider that an honor, actually.
Yeah. So he got a pretty good burial and send-off. So.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's
good for you.
Yeah.
Boy. Now, Jacqueline, some of your pet projects have to do with animals. I know that you're really big into supporting, like, spaying and neutering, and also literacy, right?
Well, yes. The literacy is I'm nowhere near as active in that as I am with the animals, but it doesn't mean I don't have the passion for it. I just haven't quite found the outlet yet. But locally here in Asheville, North Carolina, there's a group called the Animal Compassion Network. And I've hooked up with them, and I have become practically an activist. It's awesome. Actually, I'm a foster home now. So my 6 kitties now are added to on a rotating basis. Right now I have actually 2 foster cats, 2 girls, And one, her human mommy died, so she's grieving, actually. So I'm trying to help bring her out of that. She won't eat, you know, that kind of a thing. So I'm hoping that a little love and attention will change that. And the other one, her name is Baby, and she really is a baby. She's so tiny, even though she's not. She's like about a year old, but and every step she takes, she makes biscuits. You know how that she kneads. Everybody calls it something different. It's either making mittens, making biscuits, or just kneading, whatever. It's very cute. She's a cute kid.
And I had something I was going to
say.
No, I know that you talk on your website a little bit about, you know, getting your cat spayed and neutered, and that there's actually help out there for
yes, there is.
If
like,
people take it out, because I know a
lot
of
people. All you have to do is really look, look up for your local SPCA or ASPCA, and even if you can't. Well, I mean, usually you can get it through them, but even if that turns out to be an expensive alternative to you or more expensive than you can afford, they will always be able to point you in the right direction. The reason why I got involved in this is because I'm much more active here than I was in New York, and the reason why is because New York shelters have set an incredible standard for what they will do for the animal population and for pet owners. And I came down here, and I always thought this is the way the world is, you know, because I've lived in New York most of my life. I thought all shelters are these really wonderful places. They have their acts together, blah, blah, blah. And then I adopted two kittens from a local shelter that shall remain nameless at the moment. And I was completely horrified by the experience. The kittens, one of them turned out to have AIDS, and I had to put him to sleep.
Oh.
And that is not the way you would like. That's not what my intention is when I go to adopt kittens. And in New York, everybody's tested and gave them their shots, and, you know, they have spay appointments, and they're very strict, and they put you through this whole big thing. I mean, these people barely ask me my name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think
let
it's
walk
very
out with two kittens,
that,
you know.
I think it's lucky. Very admirable that you're involved with that.
I can't do otherwise. It's very, it's not that I'm trying to be admirable or anything like that. It's just, feel so passionately. All it took was that one incident and the pain of I mean, I had this poor little baby for maybe just a few hours, because the tests are really fast now and you can find these things out. And I just and unfortunately, you have no recourse once this happens. There's very few places that take in cats with FIV, feline immunodeficiency virus.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some farms and stuff like that, but I could not find anything like that around here.
Now, since, you know, we're a paranormal show and I don't, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, because I'm going to cry if we don't move up top.
Yeah, me too. I'm sorry.
I'm going to totally start to cry.
I was going to say, do you, like, just kind of a really horrible segue to keep, you know, Mandy and me from, you know, bawling.
I'm not even bawling yet, and I'm like sad.
Do you think that, I don't know if we discussed this with you, I know we've discussed it in the past, but do you think that, you know, one, well, you'd have to probably believe in ghosts or spirits, and do you believe that cats and animals, you know, also come back?
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because, one of my favorite things to say is, when I die, I want to come back as one of my own cats, because oh, they are so spoiled. They got a good boy. You know, they have a warm lap, or bosom in this case, to lay on and get to eat whatever they want, and all we have to do is meow, and they have me wrapped around their little paws, sort of a thing. But I find it extremely hard to believe that consciousness just poofs out. Mm-hmm. You know, that when you die, that's it. It ends. It's dark. It's nothing. I just find that very hard to believe. And maybe that's a comfort thing, but I really do. And I think that whatever happens after that, it's a matter of karma. You know, you have lessons to learn in life, and spiritually, if you have not learned those lessons, you are either you're doomed to repeat them until you learn them, or if you have, you know, then you evolve to the next lesson, whatever that might be, or the next life, the next experiences that you need to, you know, learn.
Now,
at least that's what I think.
Yeah.
And, well, since our subject today, I guess, is photography, we should probably touch upon that a little bit. I'm horrible with time, so I don't even know where we're at in the show. But
I'm lost too, so it's okay. Yeah.
Great, wonderful. With, like, photographs, I know that there's a superstition or the belief out there that if somebody takes your photo, that they steal a part of your soul or actually steal your soul. And so, I mean, a lot of cultures, maybe not so much anymore, but in the past, believed that, you know, they didn't want their photograph taken because it would steal a part of them, or that it would open up your soul and open you up to, like, evil spirits and possession and things like that. The other kind of interesting superstition was that if three people are photographed together, the one in the middle will die first, which, you know, I don't even want to go look at how many times we've been photographed. But what's your take on that? You know, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm a spiritual person, I am a scientific and technological person, and I believe that obviously that is, to me, that's a fear that's associated with the unknown. That's just, you know, I don't believe that myself at all, not at all. I think that the more primitive or cultures, or the more I don't want primitive to be insulting, but less exposed to technology and stuff like that would find that to be a very fearful thing. You're the first time they ever saw it, you know, this thing makes this dramatic flash, and then all of a sudden you see your own image on a piece of paper. Almost, it must look like a prison that it was captured and stolen, you know.
Yeah, I know a lot of it came through actually because of the process of taking a photograph involved a mirror, and your image was reflected into the mirror, and that mirrors were believed to be gateways, and that a lot of spiritualists believed that the human image on the mirrored surface was akin to looking into their soul, and that, you know, that's how the demons would get in. And like the Aborigines in Australia believe that, you know, we're one of the cultures that believe that it took away a part of one's soul
yeah.
to have yourself photographed. And then it kind of raised the question with some people as to where what happens if you take a photograph after death, and, you know, would that have any significant meaning, which comes up a lot in discussion with, like, death photography. And I think we lost Mandy.
I'm sorry, I'm back now. Yeah, I had a little glitch. Back. And
Actually, as far as photography is concerned, the thing that fascinates me, not so much, you know, I mean, obviously that's a very interesting how people believe that, and the whole reasons why and history behind it and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about photography that I find fascinating is the ability to catch auras, or the ability to catch something just beyond peripheral vision. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, the sun, it was a good thing. But I actually honestly believe that some people have the power to actually photograph something beyond what you're seeing actually in this plane.
Right.
Yeah, or orbs and ghost photography.
And we have a question in the chat room from the Paranormals. They want to know, do you believe animals can see the dead?
J- sure, can't we all? I mean, if you mean spirits and stuff like that, oh yeah, especially I especially will think that of cats. They always give you this impression of a perception way beyond what you're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that they can. I mean, they sense so many things we don't. I mean, they sense, you know, bad weather heading this way. I mean, there's so many things that they're in tune to that we're just not. So I think it's natural that, you know, energies would be something that, you know, they pick up on. And
yeah,
know.
You know, it's really funny because
where, you know, dogs and stuff can, by their behavior, predict like when weather's going to change or tornadoes. So why wouldn't they predict some kind of energy shift?
Yeah, well, animals and earthquakes too. Animals can sense it way better than. I mean, they're way so sensitive that they can actually tell when it's going to happen before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be sitting in my house. I have six cats. I mean, and they'll be, you know, laying and lounging around and doing nothing and all of a sudden, they'll pick their heads up, and they'll all at once, and they'll turn like in tandem and everything. And I'm like, and it gives you the willies in the biggest way. And then you just trying to see what it is that they hear or what they're seeing, or you know. And sometimes it's something as simple as they heard somebody is already coming up the driveway long before you can hear it as a human. But other times it's. Something on the wind, you know, something different.
Yeah, and then the paranormal also wants to know, what's your take on small children in seeing spirits?
I think that the innocence of a child leaves it open to a lot of things that we have jaded ourselves as adults.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, from seeing. One of the things that I always count on, always, is a child's reaction to people.
Mm-hmm.
They know on some sort of a level, some deep in the, inner instinct that only children have,
mm-hmm.
whether people are good or bad. You know, I mean, generally good or bad, or mm-hmm. just their intentions. It seems like it always amazes me when they can be lured away by people who are not very good, because every time I see children and work with them, it's amazing. It's stunning how they can tell their reactions are like they know somebody is not a good person to be near. You know, actually my cats. I have a cat. His name is Damien, and it's very appropriate. I guess sometimes look for the little 666 in his fur, you know, because he can be such a little demon. But he is a barometer for people, for me.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't like them, I know that I should be wary. And I learned that lesson the hard way. I mean, I met the people who have always seemed nice and really, really sweet, and he would. And for some reason, just hate them, hiss and swat and whatever. And then eventually, it would turn around to be that person is not good for me at all.
Mm-hmm.
That they deceive me or hurt me in some way. And so I've learned to trust him. He's got really good judgment, much better than me.
Anyone who wants to talk to Jackie or talk superstitions can go ahead and call in at 646-595-3998. It's New York number, so long distance charges may apply. You can also go to ravenhappyhour.com, which is all one word, and follow the prompts and find your way into the live chat session, and we'll go ahead and read your question on air. So now I want to move a little, since we're the Raven, to ravens and the superstitions that they're messengers of death, and that sometimes when they crow, people think that they're saying corpse or something like that. And I mean, I've always found that a little fascinating, that whole blackbird shows up and everybody's screwed mentality. So what do you guys think on that?
I'm not really scared of ravens.
Yeah, not me either.
I've never heard that, and I hear a lot of
really
it coming. I come across that in I come across a lot of superstitions and a lot of mythology. I've been researching all this stuff forever, and I have actually never heard that.
Yeah.
I mean, the only connection I have to The Raven is the poem by Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I never realized that.
Yeah. I mean, well, some believe, you know, it's a good thing. But there is this big thing where, you know, they believe that this thing is a messenger of death and that when it appears, you know, sometimes it's a, you know, it's saying instead of like caw caw, corpse, corpse, and that, you know, this person or someone within the home or someone you know will die. And
some people believe that if a swallow flies into the home, it's a harbinger of. Actually, there's an I believe there's extremes. One is one belief is that it's a harbinger of death if a swallow flies into a home, and there's another that believes it's a harbinger of birth. So it's very interesting. They have two polar opposites for the same event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they say the same thing about robins if they fly through a room, or if they fly into a room through a window, that death is going to follow. And there's a big superstition out there where birds, like in general, in the house is a sign of death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which,
because it's unnatural for them to do something.
I have to say this, though, that in all honesty, I don't buy into too many superstitions. I sort of have a very healthy, and I put that in very big capitals, of skepticism for these things. We had a bird come into our house, at our house, and it's not a normal thing. It wasn't like we were bird crossing. And I had to have the neighbor guy come help me, like, contain this thing, because I'd try to get it, and, you know, it'd go the other direction. And that sort of, you know, stuck in the back of my head because I've, you know, been interested in mythology and superstitions in the paranormal since I think I could talk. And I, you know, had it in the back of my head. And like a week and a half later, someone very, very close in the family died. And it's not like we, you know, were expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I'm sitting here going, and I mocked the bird in the house thing. Yep, sorry about that one. So, yeah, I mean, that one, I don't know, that played with me a little bit because I'm so... Okay, yeah, guys, who thought up this one, you know?
I am very skeptical when it comes to superstition. And that's very funny because I'm actually practicing witch, and sometimes one of the things that you do is learn to look for signs and all of that. But there's a fine line between something that you can read into and, you know, coincidence and, you know, circumstance and stuff like that, you know. I mean, it's like for some people, the art of reading tarot, there are people, I believe, who have genuine gifts, genuine gifts. And then there are people who it's all constructed in the... incredible art of being able to read people and to be general enough for people to start attaching things to what they're reading, you know, and go, yes, that's just like me, and people give hints and things away and make it easier for somebody to read them.
Yeah. It's surprising to me. I mean, we didn't pick the Raven specifically for this reason. The Raven actually came from a Daughter of Darkness nightclub thing, but when you look in the mythology of these blackbirds and the ravens and this and that, it's really interesting to see what, you know, throughout time people have done. Like the Celts, they believe that one of their goddesses, Morgan, I can't remember what the name is. You would think I'd actually look that up before I said it, but now I'm swinging. that she could shift into a crow and like fly over their battles and things like that, and then when they left the field, basically collect the dead heads and stuff like that and like trophies basically.
Wow.
So I mean that's really cool shit. Who sat there and thought that one up? I mean, come on.
Well, obviously that could very easily come from the superstition of the soldiers of the time who had to watch carrion birds
to pick up the remains.
Basically pick over the dead.
Right.
So, you know, that makes
A trickle effect.
Actually, one of my favorite things, it's so funny he brings this up, I keep saying that, but one of my favorite things is to research what is behind some of the phrases that we use constantly in the English language, like walking over, you feel someone walking over your grave or something like that, you know.
Right.
And I always find it so fascinating when I find out what the origin of a statement like that is for. I can't remember. I'm trying to think. I heard one recently, and it's really fascinating, and I would sound really witty right now if I came up with it. But the old gray matter, she ain't what she used to be.
We do have some interesting discussion going on in the chat room right now. Roscoe Phil has mentioned that they get a creepy feeling around or with crows, and I'm paraphrasing here, and that when they are at haunted castles or concentration camps, there seems to be, you know, more active activity with crows, or they seem agitated. And same thing with squirrels, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Squirrels.
And I'd never, you know, heard that about squirrels either, you know, acting possessed. I think they kind of act crazy anyway, skimpering around the yard, but hey.
Well, you know, I mean, you have to, I've never walked through a concentration camp. Can you imagine just what that feeling must be of walking through a place like that, knowing the horrors that took place there?
Right.
I mean, you're going to be hypersensitive to what's around you in that instance, of course. You know, if there's ever a place for superstition to give you some chills, that's definitely it.
Now, okay, some vampire myth. What are some crazy cockamamie things you've heard, you know, in the superstition myth of vampires?
Vampire myth.
Yeah, some just crazy stuff. Like, for me, example, like, you know, the throwing the seeds on the ground is going to, if you're being chased by one, you throw a bunch of seeds on the ground, they got to stop and pick them all up. Because often, you know, one, you keep seeds in your pocket, right? And two, I can see how, you know, they'd be completely obsessive compulsive, and, well, I probably would have to stop and pick them up knowing my personality.
An interesting twist on that, if you ever watched, like, that, it was like the sequel to Dracula 2000, where they had it, and they had, you know, all those myths, and they had them, you know, they had to untie ropes, and they had to count the seeds. And there's this scene where they throw a bunch of seeds out, and he, like, counts them in, like, less than a second.
Oh my God, he's the Rain Man of vampires.
You mentioned that. I'm like, that was a really interesting take. It's like, yeah, they might have to count the seeds, but this one did it, you know, in less than a second, didn't even stop walking.
I mean, it's just like one of those little things that, I mean, there's oddities. I mean, you always have something that led to something that led to something, but some of them are a little more off the beaten path than others.
For instance, who thought of garlic?
Yeah. I mean,
obviously garlic, if you eat enough, it will keep everybody away.
Works for me.
Who thought that hanging garlands of garlic would be something to ward off evil spirits? I would love to know.
You know, I think it started in ancient Egypt, but I'm not positive. I think it's something that goes back as far as they can find proof of ancient, you know, Egyptians doing this to ward off evil.
But sometimes it comes down, it's half superstition and half practicality.
Right. Well, they used to.
I assume that garlic is one of those very fragrant things that can help cover the odor of death.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You would probably find that in tombs and stuff like that.
Well, I would imagine, you know, if they're using it for healing and, you know, something bad and ominous is over this person and they're sick and, you know, what you don't understand, you explain away, and this person starts to get better, it probably would be an easy assumption to make that this garlic pushed it away.
Right.
So, I mean, you can see where, you know, every culture has probably had something. But, yeah, I mean, the necklace of it, that cracks me up. Yeah, everything's going to stay away from me.
Historically, garlic has been associated with, like, health and life in general. And that's kind of
And vampires are about death and
decay. Yeah, and also it was actually used as a, like, mosquito repellent. And mosquito or, you know, vampire bites. And
I'm going to rub that on me at night in summer. Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, like, vampires were associated with rabies, so...
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has dropped dead, like, from DEET, so I think I'm going to go with the garlic.
So, yeah, I mean... Oh, it was, well, like, the people who suffered from rabies got fixated by the smell of garlic, and rabies was associated with vampirism. So, you know, it was kind of known to... That's kind of one of the reasons why it came out.
Yeah. I like the myth that if you sprinkle oats in front of, like, your doorway and stuff, that the vampire can't get in. Yeah, because the Quaker Oak guy, he's tough, man. He's going to, like, totally keep him away. I mean, these things just, they kind of crack me up, you know? I mean, just,
well, actually, invitation.
Yeah.
That's very, I find that intriguing, too. You need to invite, now, obviously, you can see the parallel. You need to invite the vampire into the house in order for him to come in. Well, obviously, you invite evil into your own self, into your own home, and you get what you invite into it. You know, you deserve what you invite into your life and into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually see a lot of almost Christianity to that, because that's
that one actually came from the Victorian period, where it was, you know, you didn't walk into somebody's house without being invited. It was very high on etiquette. And so that was one of the reasons, too.
Is that right?
It was, that was more of a Victorian era to the vampire story.
You are a fount of information.
I know a bunch of useless trivia.
I know stupid shit like seeds.
I had never heard of that before.
Yeah, it's just as bizarre. And, you know, then, of course, there's the obvious stake them in the heart or behead them. And I don't know too many things they're getting up after that. So I'm that's a fairly safe assumption. So, and if it does, run. Run and pray you have sunflower seeds. That's all I have to say.
And then there's always fire. Fire is very cleansing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Now, I'm thinking of things. I'm trying to think of other things. There's crazy things. You know, mirrors, if they...
Vampire-wise, you mean, or vampire-wise?
Yeah, vampire-wise, yeah. Just, I mean, there was just cockamamie things that, you know...
Have you, after you behead the vampire,
mm-hmm.
Do you know where you're supposed to put the head?
What's that?
Is it between...
Do you know where you're supposed to put the head?
No.
There's two different versions, as far as I've known. Either you bury them completely separate.
Right.
Another,
well, that I knew, but I didn't know placing it special.
The head at their feet.
Interesting.
I don't know if you've I've heard that one before, at their feet. And that's not the first time I've heard something like that, about burying something
right
at their feet. You got me so curious now.
Well, you know, it got so crazy with people thinking people were vampires and that. I know that somewhere, and I want to say Romanian, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, that they had like a law put into effect by one of the head guys that you can't be digging people up, guys, and doing this to them, and you can't hunt people down and assume they're a vampire. I mean, can you imagine living in an era, in a time when they had friggin' vampire law? Seriously.
Well, can you imagine living in a time where so many people were dying from tuberculosis and diseases like that, that they were accidentally burying people alive?
The whole bell thing,
and stuff like that. They tied a bell to their fingers, and it's just what is it? One of our very common phrases evolved out of that. What is it? Crud. Oh my God, it's gone. It's all gone.
The one I can think of is, if the bell rings, an angel gets his wings. I don't think it's helping us out here.
Clarence is flying.
For whom does the bell toll? It tolls for me.
Mm-hmm. Some other off-the-wall things, knocking. People hear knocking, like, in threes, and they think it's an omen of death, like knocking on their headboard or knocking on, you know, and it's obviously not someone standing or knocking to get in. I mean, they hear it and there's no one else around. So, I mean, that's kind of, you know, one, I don't know, if I hear knocking and no one else is around, one, I'm thinking I got big rats, and two, I'm thinking after I've you know, shaken that, I'm probably going to die of fright, to hell with everything else, something's freaking knocking on my bed.
That's so funny, because I heard, before I had some friends move in with me, I heard, someone knock on my window three times. Like, if you take a knuckle and you go tap tap tap, you know, that's what I heard, and that all the cats reacted to it. So, and I heard it, and I'm like, I cannot be imagining things, you know. And then, actually, I was I don't know exactly what happened. I have no proof. But I think somebody was in my house right after that, because I was asleep in my bedroom, and I thought my housekeeper had come in. That's how much noise I heard.
Yeah.
You know, and I know the difference between a person bustling around the house and cats. You know what I mean? So everybody's like, oh, maybe it was your cats. I'm like, no, no, no. I know the sound of my cats. I know each meow. I know who's throwing up. I know everything. But it was like the sound of somebody bustling around the kitchen. And when I woke up, the garage was wide open and the doors were wide open and nobody was here. Nobody was here. And
yes,
my housekeeper
that
had
would
out.
That would freak me out on a
oh, I called the cops.
Yeah.
Called the cops because I thought, you know, of course you think human being first, of, mm-hmm. you know, and foremost. But now that we're talking about this, and then I remembered that the window had been knocked on, and
yeah,
it could be anything.
It's
a very young house. It's
a
only
funny story about thinking immediately I went to paranormal because I'm just me and I'm weird. I was at my other home, and I was working in the office in the other home, and there was no exterior windows to see out in this office. It was what we always called, like, you know, the dark bar room, because it had been a bar at one time in that area. And I don't know, just always had a really oppressive feeling in there. Anyways, so I'm in there, and I'm working, and I hear voices going, shh, watch out. Okay, climb in there. You know, and I'm hearing all this, and, I mean, it's, like, kind of freaking me out, right? So I get up because it sounds really close, and I'm like, okay, that's weird, you know, and I'm thinking I've got a ghost who's talking to me, and I think he brought a buddy. And I'm going through the house, and I'm just waiting for this, you know, phantom to come out and kill me. You know, I'm waiting for it. I realize it's the baby monitor, and I realize that it's actually people trying to break into my house. I know. I called, okay, me being the genius I am, I called my stepdad first,
I called my dad first.
Yeah, he was a sergeant on the same force that would have came. You know, he's like, call the police, stupid.
Yeah, that's what my dad said.
So, you know, I call the police and they come, and I'm waiting for them to, like, make fun of me, right? Because this is, like, Blair Witch time, you know? You know,
right.
I feel like everybody's hypersensitive. So I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for someone to make fun of me for this. I'm waiting for them to laugh. And they pull me outside and they take me around front and they show me all these footprints in the front bushes by the windows in the house. So, yeah, immediately I thought paranormal. Well, you know, two sides are trying to come. I mean, I'm waiting for the dead guy. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened.
I see now my instinct is to go the opposite, is to think human first.
Yeah.
And then when it's unexplainable, is.
It was,
you know,
that the monitor was in the kitchen area, which was off of this room, and it was echoing because this room had, like, a mostly brick interior lining. So it was echoing in a way that made it sound like it was coming from everywhere at one time.
So,
and it was the middle of the night.
Tuned in this room.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. And, you know, that, you know, I don't really talk too much about it, but that parental fright of my child at the other end of the house. So, you know, you go rushing through, and then, you know, you realize, you stop and realize that it's like, you know, when you get the call back on that, you know, those old legends where the person's calling from in your house, ma'am, you know, that kind of
thing. Oh, geez.
I'm like, oh, my God, it's the baby monitor, and it's real.
Nobody watches too many horror movies.
I know. And I turn around, and I'm like, and it took me a moment. You know, I'm staring at the baby monitor, and I'm like, okay, it's real. It's not like a phone conversation I'm picking up on, you know, somebody else's phone. It's freaking real, and they're trying to break in my house, and I know where the other end of the baby monitor is, so what's that tell you? Yeah. So.
I'm curious, do you feel that you have any psychic ability or sensitivity?
No, and I actually feel a little slighted about that. I don't think that I do, honestly. I don't know.
What about you?
Me? No.
No?
I've got no psychic
envy. I have major psychic envy.
Yeah, I have psychic envy, and I've got an active imagination.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have an active imagination, and I do not have psychic envy because, honestly, all of my life, it's going to sound so insane. All of my life, I've dreamed the future. It's very freaky. I have deja vu all over again and again and again and again. And I got to the point where it's not so much now in my older years. I was much more, we were talking about children, much more open to it when I was a teenager especially and more recognizing of it. I would have a dream, very vivid, about real people in my real life, and then it would come to pass. Right, and it wouldn't be until I was in the middle of the conversation where I would be like, oh, my God, this is my dream. So I started writing things down or telling other people, I had this dream. I'm going to tell you about it, okay? So, like, when it happens, you'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm gonna just to prove that this is happening to me, and I would. My friends and I we would be all freaked out that I could do that. And trust me, it was kind of, and it was nothing monumental. It was no dramatic, you know, moments. It was just conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It would be just odd conversations, normal BS. It was just, but I would do it. It was weird. It was weird. Now I dream stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't tend to dream, if that makes sense. And when I do, they're disturbing. I they make no sense. Like, I dreamt last night that I was running on a roller coaster, beams, like for the, like this steel beams of the roller coaster, trying to get away from someone. Okay, anyone who knows me, I'm petrified of heights. I do live near an amusement park. I won't go on any of those things because I'm petrified of heights. I dreamt that I fell, and then that I somehow managed to survive this, you know, 265-foot drop, because apparently I bounce well. And I'm running and I'm running and I'm running, and then what do? I choke to death on nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I don't have ordinary dreams. I have these completely bizarre.
Well, they
try to piece them together.
If you dream of death, it's a sign of birth. And if you dream of birth, it's a sign of death. At least from some of the dream, like, interpretation books and things.
Yeah, and birth in, like, a liberal term, like a rebirth of something in your life or something, or birth as in
so,
kids,
because yeah,
seriously,
you were having,
donate my
like,
uterus.
You're pregnant. Congratulations.
I will go jump off the roller coaster.
No, it's probably a rebirth in your life, I would guess. But I just remember that it being the opposite when it came to that. Like, death
yeah.
dreams were actually a birth of something and vice versa. So, yeah, congratulations. You're going to have a baby.
No, no. I will donate my uterus to science before that happens again. I'm done. Examine this and tell me why I have demons. Thank you.
Well, I know, speaking of pregnant women, like the topic we're on, I know like a lot of, have you heard this where pregnant women aren't supposed to be around the dying or they're not supposed to go to funerals or?
No, I haven't heard that one.
I had a lady I worked with when I was like 16 at a nursing home, and we were in the assisted living unit where there, you know, was unfortunately a lot of passing away going on, and I know a lot of, like, she was from Africa, and her culture believed that she couldn't go into the same room where somebody was dying because it was bad for the baby. And we were just mentioned pregnancy, and I thought of that.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the superstitions. And I haven't really heard too many more superstitions as far as pregnancy, but.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
we should probably take a second to say.
Tons of them as far as pregnancy is concerned. Well, I mean, even just being able to tell the sex of a baby.
Yeah.
We
should thank you for coming on, because we're on a one-minute warning now with the end of the show.
I know. This has been so fast.
I know. This has been a lot. We got to do this again sometime. This shooting the shit on superstition has been great, and I'm going to name it that next time, too. But thank you for joining us, Jackie. Next week, our guest is Marlee Matthews, an author, and I believe she does paranormal in that, so we're excited about that. Michelle, you have anything?
Just join us next Wednesday at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern.
All right, and thank you again, Jackie.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye, everyone.